testimonies. Traditionally, and who am I to flout tradition, Christian people are encouraged to slide their testimonies into any human interaction very early on, starting once they've undergone their dramatic transformative conversion experiences. And much of the focus on Christian activity is upon that one experience. In fact, many don't want to hear much of anything in a hymn or a sermon that doesn't come to bear purely on that single, flash-frozen instant, the moment I took my first step of faith. Conversionism, my friend Frank calls that. Crucicentrism. Soteriology taken to extremes, Frank might write. Frank writes like that, ever declaiming salvific, imminent beaux mots of which spellcheck has no praxic ken. He's Dr. Frank now. I proofread every sesquipedalistic syllable of ineffably arcane verbiage he wrote in his doctoral thesis for him. In a consumer culture, it should come as no surprise that we tend to view our connection to God in terms of choice, selection, that we imagine things in terms of signing up for special, limited-time offers with unbeatable features and making an informed choice for this package over the ones offered by the store or church up the street. Some folks nowadays even believe that every time we make a choice, we create a whole alternate universe in which a different choice was made by an alternate version of us, our own quantum choices rippling across realities, creating entire universes. And that's a pretty grandiose level to take the idolatry of choice to. I chose iPhone, thereby creating an alternate universe in which I chose Samsung. I made that universe, which sprang into being and revolves around my choice. No universe exists in which I chose BlackBerry. I'm not saying choice isn't a part of the New Testament, just that we can get to the point where we're pretty much Western consumer types saying we saved ourselves by making a wise choice for Christ. Just like we were wise in choosing VHS, DVD, iPhone, American Airlines, AT&T, and Volvo. I know people in Christian circles who do more to worship that aforementioned moment they took their first step of faith than to recognize anything Jesus ever taught or chose to do in his life on earth. In this mindset, he exists purely to be the product, an afterlife insurance package. He has been left no personhood at all. I have to notice that back in the day, the songs we sang mostly seemed to be about needing to get saved, getting saved, what Jesus did to save us, how little we deserved to be saved, and how bad we were now at acting like people who were truly, gratefully saved. Comparatively little was sung about the journey taking place afterward, or anything Jesus said or did that wasn't directly about us and our sin, like we were supposed to keep on returning over and over again to that one moment, the moment we got saved, our testimony. I suppose I'd better do that, right? In my fondest imaginings, I kind of wish my testimony sounded a little something like this.
In the 70s, I was a roadie for KISS. I did drugs, drank alcohol, had an awful lot of casual sex, mostly with prom queens, models, and movie stars. I smoked cigarettes, swore, and all the rest of it. I'd sit up late at night playing guitars and singing with the band and swimsuit models, talking about, well, whatever came into our heads. I thought life couldn't get any better. But then one day, after many years of enjoying every single thing this lifestyle had to offer, I realized that I wanted more. In a hotel room in Las Vegas after the show where Gene lit his head on fire, I pulled out a Bible that had been left in the nightstand by a faithful Gideon and read it cover to cover that very night. Suddenly, just like an explosion from one of the flash bombs I'd ignite beside the amps during God of Thunder, I realized that the way I was living was wrong now, and that it was time to come to Jesus, to meet the real God of Thunder. I wanted to read and pray all night and go to church every day. So I got saved. Tears streaming down my face, I went to a church, and kind people told me how to live a new life, a clean life, a life I could be proud of, a life like theirs. The most beautiful girl in the church married me once she was certain I'd found the Lord. Now I own a Christian bookstore, preach to kids on the street, set up the sound system for the worship team at my church, and have a radio program and four beautiful children.
Or I'd no doubt really have your attention and offers to speak at your church if my testimony was quite a bit more like this.
Before I found Jesus, I was black and living in the hood. I ran with a nefarious street gang selling illegal recreational drugs, facilitating drive-by shootings, misappropriating cars, indulging in toots of crack, benefiting financially from prostitutes who got the back of my hand if they were short on the cheddar, drinking copious amounts of grain, taking the Lord's name in vain, and all the rest of that up in there, you know what I'm saying? You know what? No matter how much heroin I did, no matter how many fine ladies I got down with all at the same time, no matter how much rap music I listened to, it just wasn't enough. I wasn't happy. I knew I could have more, you feel me? One day on the juice and on my way to lay, I heard on some broke-ass shorties who owed our gang some Benjamins. Walking down Second, I heard the dopest sound in the whole world. I walked into a church where they were singing some deep, fat hymns, and I listened to that preacher speak. Tears streaming down my face, I really listened. You know what I'm saying? It was like homeboy was speaking just to me. G told me I was a sinner, what up, and that I needed Jesus to forgive all my stanky, ratchet sins. I got saved, you feel me? It was tight. Ever since that day, I've just lived my life to please him, and now I own Mother Faith Records, a label that produces Christian gangster rap music that saves souls from the street hourly. My new album drops this week, yo. I gave up drinking and drugging and hoes for Jesus, not to be confused with the Dove Award nominee recording artist of that name, and I don't regret it for a moment. Jesus met me in the hood. That's actually the name of my first Mother Faith and album, featuring sick beats by Fresh Pastor Slice Harris and Michael W. Smith. The pastor's fine little blonde daughter married me once she was sure I'd truly found the Lord and was on fire for him. I tapped at the donk-a-donk nightly and we now have 7 beautiful children, a sick minivan, and a dope crib in the burbs for reals, believe it.
And some other people would want their testimony to sound more or less like this.
I was raised by wonderful, loving, decent, positive, God-fearing Christian parents to be a church-going, happy, Bible-believing, Republican-voting, decent, positive Christian young man. I was well-liked at church and school alike, and brought many of my classmates to Jesus, or at least made them question all the fun they were having. During the summertime, our family would often go to all the really poor parts of the world and take pictures of the poor people to raise awareness and tell starving folks how they needed Jesus. This one picture I took when I was 10 of a little girl who starved to death shortly after the picture was taken ended up being on the cover of Charity Monthly. At school, I was always witnessing. I always had time to stop and talk to kids who were smoking, shoplifting, reading Harry Potter and the rest of it, to try to explain to them that they could have more, and just how cool and awesome it really was to be truly saved and just really live an extreme, sold-out life on fire for Jesus and be loved by Him every day. I ran a before-school Bible study and prayer group, an honor roll Students for Christ ministry, was valedictorian of my year, and voted person most likely to end world hunger in this lifetime by my class. The girls at my school were heartbroken that I refused to date a single one of them, as I was too busy winning souls to Christ. I spent my lunch hour preaching to people, trying to win trophies of grace to Jesus, just like I won trophies at golf and badminton for my shelf. My church took notice of all the good that I was doing and sent me to Suffering Christ Bible College to become a youth pastor. It was so sweet to be at a school with a decent dress code, behavior contract, and no non-Christian people allowed. I did wonder about a few of them, though. After I graduated with a degree in extreme evangelism, summa cum laude, though, I knew I had to have more. I couldn't just sell cars or something like that and do church on weekends. That just wasn't me, you know. No, sir. So, I went to Africa to preach to the natives in Morocco for 2 whole years. These were the best 2 years of my life. I spent the next 10 years of my life, tears streaming down my face, deeply humbled by touring around the world on paid lecture circuits, selling autographed copies of my book and promoting a documentary about my special experiences walking with the Lord, with Kirk Cameron playing me in dramatic reenactments of some of my most humbling experiences. During this inspiring, deeply humbling tour, sharing my faith walk with other Christians, I married the most beautiful, Sold Out for Christ girl at the Worship Inspire team at the Third Baptist Turbo Power Mega Church in Houston, Texas, and now have a thriving ministry, a lucrative series of books, DVDs, and motivational CDs, and 9 beautiful children, all named after characters from the Bible. Haman is 5 this year, and Rebecca will be homeschooling her along with the rest, of course. We are raising them with no gluten, no refined sugar, no television, no internet, no non-Christian books, and no vaccinations. What a savior.
The first 2 testimony stories that I contrived for this piece in imitation of a lot of things I've really heard over and over and over and over and over are kind of prodigal son, exciting conversion stories. People love to hear those. They're so simple, so dramatic, so black and white, so filthy rags to heavenly riches. The third story is about someone who many would consider the perfect Christian role model, growing up Christian, and everything working out well for him as a result. Just like things are supposed to if you have, as I did, a Christian upbringing which you take very seriously. But my own life didn't go like any of those. If my story is like any person from the Bibles, it is more like the story of the prodigal son's elder brother. And that's not right at all. He's not a very good role model. He followed all the rules and ended up a miserable SOB anyway. Perhaps as a result, thought he'd earned that right. Wasn't loving, joyful, tolerant, long-suffering, forgiving, or any of that good stuff. He was doing a whole other thing. It involved criticism, envy, and strife, and anger, and following all the rules, and working really hard and resenting people who didn't, judging and correcting them. And that was me.